Actually, it's a victory for Alaska and a victory for me. I've told them all along this is not the way to do it.
The Republican health care legislation does not get a vote. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, legislation aimed at a cut to oil tax credits.
We're having a struggle meeting our basic needs and paying for essential services. The cash credits have to go.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
Today, President Donald Trump and House Speaker Paul Ryan pulled the plug on their bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Ryan declared it a disappointing day for Republicans, but Alaska's Republican congressman says he's celebrating the bill's defeat. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Congressman Don Young had his doubts about the bill. He never said he'd support it, but even as he headed from his office to the House chamber to vote, he wasn't willing to say he'd vote against it.
I still have reservations, so.
Within seconds, though.
The chair declares the House in recess, subject to the call of the chair.
Speaker Ryan had pulled the bill down. He didn't have the votes. Young said later that was fine with him.
Actually, it's a victory for Alaska and a victory for me. I've told them all along this is not the way to do it.
Young says he thinks House Republicans will try again. Next time, he says, they should slow down and write a bill that addresses the cost of medical care, which he says Ryan's bill didn't do.
No, didn't address. What did this bill address? Nothing. Yeah. And, I know what they were trying to do, and it was the wrong thing to do. They were trying to pass it on the same day that Obamacare passed.
Thursday was the 7th anniversary of President Obama signing the Affordable Care Act into law. In rushing to meet that self-imposed deadline, Young says Republican leaders made the same mistakes Democrats made 7 years ago by crafting the bill largely behind closed doors and without any support from the opposite party. Under the ACA, Alaskans get big tax credits to offset the high cost of insurance on Alaska's individual market. The Republican repeal bill had smaller tax credits that didn't vary by state. That's one reason Young says he's glad it failed.
It didn't accomplish the goals that I wanted to accomplish, and it probably would have hurt a lot of my Alaskan people.
Young says he and Ryan spoke repeatedly. He thinks the speaker improved the bill some, but not enough. The Washington Post reported that at one point on the House floor, Ryan was on bended knee, apparently pleading with Young to win his vote. Young says there was no horse trading going on.
Nobody offers anything in this business. We talk.
As for Ryan's pleading, Young remembers it differently.
Yeah, he didn't go on bended knee. He was just trying to talk to me.
Uh-oh.
All right, good enough.
Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
State House members from both sides of the aisle have put forward new ideas to balance the state government budget into the future. The co-chairman of the House Finance Committee revised their plans to introduce an income tax to Alaska for the first time in nearly four decades. Instead of basing the tax on 15% of residents' federal tax liability, the revision would introduce new tax rates. Co-chair Homer Republican Paul Seaton says public testimony opposed to basing the tax on the federal liability led to the change. It would instead be based on a person's income, but exclude permanent fund dividends and $4,000 per person.
When the testimony was pretty much that we should go to adjusted gross income, the administration had a consultant that had worked on an adjusted gross tax bill earlier. And so some of that language has been incorporated in here.
The income tax would start at $10,000 for a single person and just under $23,000 for a couple. The rates would range from 2.5% at the low end to 7% for taxable income above $250,000 for a single person and $500,000 for a couple. Republican House Minority Caucus members also put forward a long-term budget proposal. The plan includes larger permanent fund dividends than the plan the Senate passed, and it includes deeper spending cuts than the House is considering. The bill would still leave a several hundred million dollar gap in the budget. Anchorage Representative Lance Pruitt says he proposed the bill to make sure that residents who feel excluded from the process were represented. Those include Matanuska-Susitna Borough residents.
The Mattsu Valley is 100,000 people, and their representation here, sometimes I was feeling on this issue that they might not have actually been heard, that they have some concerns. And so I felt that we couldn't just push that group of Alaskans and set them to the side.
House Speaker Bryce Edgman says the House Finance Committee will advance legislation that will close the budget gap based on all four ideas that brought his caucus together, drawing from the permanent fund changes, reducing PFDs, raising revenue, and cutting spending.
That you need to have all those pieces in place, and absent any of those pieces, we've only done a part of our work this session.
The state budget proposal was stuck in the House this week. While the body voted to pass the budget on Monday, the House minority exercised its right to ask for the vote to be reconsidered. The budget came up again Friday. The minority didn't repeat its request for reconsideration, so the bill was sent to the Senate. The House Finance Committee will hear a public testimony on long-term budget plans next week. The Senate Finance Committee will discuss the Senate version of the budget. Lawmakers are scheduled to take public comment tomorrow on a bill that would make major changes to the way the state pays credits to oil companies on the North Slope. House Bill 111 is the latest proposed tweak to the state's oil tax system, one that supporters hope will hold oil companies to a minimum tax rate and get the state out of the business of writing checks to companies. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, Rasha McChesney has more.
Right now, Alaska has a system of tax credits designed to drive new development to the North Slope. It does this, in part, by offering credits for exploration and development of new fields, and then offering cash payments for those credits. But, as oil prices have dropped, so has the state's production tax revenue, and that's left it in the awkward position of potentially paying more in cash credits to incentivize new production than it's making from actual production. House Bill 111 proposes getting the state out of the business of cutting checks to companies and forcing them to pay a minimum tax rate. Not everyone is happy.
I mean, I think the state worked feverishly hard to attract some of the new players. And the current bill, House Bill 111, seems to be chasing away those new investors.
Pat Foley is a vice president at Kalis Energy. It's an independent company searching for oil on the North Slope with a lot of support from the state. Foley says the company spent about $125 million drilling two wells out in Smith Bay, earning enough tax credits on those wells to leave the state on the hook for about 70% of the costs. Though, Foley says the state hasn't actually reimbursed the company for those credits yet. And that investment could pay off in a big way. Kalis announced in October that it thinks it's found at least 6 billion barrels of oil in Smith Bay. But the site will be hugely expensive to develop. And under the current tax credit structure, the state could be on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars in cash subsidies as the company builds the infrastructure it will need to get that oil into the pipeline. For many lawmakers, like House Resources co-chair Garen Tarr, that's an untenable position.
The state cannot afford cash subsidies to the oil industry. We have over $900 million obligated right now. We're having a struggle meeting our basic needs and paying for essential services. The cash credits have to go.
Tarr says the bill is a change in philosophy for the state, but she and others in the House see it as a shift that needs to happen as the state grapples with low oil prices and a multi-billion dollar budget deficit. Kalis isn't the only company that has some potentially game-changing finds on the North Slope, and lawmakers are trying to find ways to continue leveling the playing field between those legacy producers on the North Slope and those new companies without writing checks. One change in the bill would let companies carry forward half of their operating losses, plus a little bit of interest for up to 7 years, essentially lowering their tax bill instead of giving them credits. And Pat Foley says that could be key to keeping independent producers operating on the North Slope.
If they eliminate all the future cash payments, but if there's something in the system that compensates us for that change, we're totally going to keep going forward.
The bill has a long way to go. It's gotten a lot of pushback from companies who see it as a tax hike at a time when they're struggling with low oil prices. And it still has to make it through the House Finance Committee and over to the Senate with fewer than 23 days left in the regular session. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, what happens in Nome during Iditarod Week besides running dogs?
As soon as they start to wrestle again, you just hear this popping noise, and the whole room goes silent. It was like a gunshot.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Though legal challenges still remain, the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly has defeated a proposal to drop its controversial invocation policy. The Peninsula Clarion reported on Wednesday the Assembly voted down an ordinance that would have repealed the section of code allowing for an invocation before meetings. Policy currently allows invocations from members of religious organizations that have established local presences and regular meetings. Chaplains serving organizations like fire departments and hospitals can also give invocations. There is an ongoing lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska calling the policy unconstitutional. Before this week's meeting, public comment stretched on for nearly 2 hours. Many members of the public say they supported the prayer, though no one spoke in favor of the current policy specifically. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Carl Castle does not anticipate any policy changes following an apparent accidental shooting that injured a patron at the Noel Ween Public Library on Wednesday. Police suspect a gun accidentally discharged, and in comments at a borough assembly last night, Mayor Castle says the incident has generated a lot of feedback.
Raised quite a bit of concern in the community. There's a multitude of different ideas. Folks get excited about this sort of thing. I think I would if I accidentally got shot sitting in the library.
Guns are banned at some public facilities like schools, but there's minimal security to ensure compliance. Mayor Castle says keeping guns out of a facility like the library would be a major undertaking.
We have to follow state statute if we want to do that. It's pretty onerous and it requires setting up screening stations, designating a specific area that would be firearm-free, screening like you would have going to the airport.
Mayor Castle noted the incident was the first ever at a borough facility. Fairbanks police are trying to locate a person who was sitting at the table where the library patron was shot. Nome turns into a bit of a carnival when the Iditarod winner mushes into town. For nearly a week, racers continue arriving before the banquet that officially concludes each year's Iditarod. For some, that means days of free time and plenty of fun events to fill it. This year, after reporting from the trail, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes kept his microphone on, and here's what he found.
All right, no photos.
In the very back of a long, crowded bar, an MC auctions off all kinds of random swag branded with liquor company logos.
All right, we have a Budweiser poker set.
Bidding starts at $15, and the MC is able to work it up a little bit higher. The whole auction lasts a while, and the point is to raise money for an annual event inside the Polar Bar, the Make Your Own Bikini Contest. A handful of contestants walk out of a back room, off a small stage, and down an improvised runway past the crowd. The outfits range from the haphazardly last minute to the impressively inventive.
Ace in the hole!
There's a dress made of playing cards, a bra fashioned out of two Red King crabs, and the winning contestant sports a two-piece ensemble from some kind of pelt.
All right, this is going to be Iditarod.
The contest is like a lot of Iditarod Week in Nome, a mix of sordid and scandalous with crafty and community-minded. Visitors pour in to this Bering seaside hub of just under 4,000 people for a kind of subarctic spring break, a Cancun of the North. Restaurants, bars, and seemingly every spare bedroom are filled. Schools across the region are on vacation, allowing for athletes and families to travel in on discounted flights from surrounding communities for a big basketball tournament. Some of the annual nighttime events are known for racy debauchery, like the Wet Buns Contest. Others are grittier, like the arm wrestling tournament at Breakers Bar, where 2 years ago, Ali Zirkel broke another competitor's arm. This year, Tara Ciccatello, a handler who competed, says a similar thing happened in the women's middleweight contest, although not with Zirkel.
As soon as they start to wrestle again, you just hear this popping noise, and the whole room goes silent. It was like a gunshot. And then we look, and the woman's arm is just hanging.
Beyond the bars, beneath the season's expanding daylight, the region's unique culture and history are on full display. Snow machiners race along the sea ice to check crab pots. Rugged literary types listen to the poems of Robert Service, read aloud in a convention center. This year, the new Carrie M. McLean Museum, which opened just a few months ago, gave tours to more than 100 people by week's end.
One of the favorite pieces in this case is this engraved ivory drill bow at the top. It's called a Patixioch in Bering Strait and Nupiaq.
Amy Phillips-Chan is the museum's director, and we're standing in front of old tools etched with scenes of walrus, whale, and seal harvests.
Drill bows are really fascinating objects because Inupiaq was primarily a spoken language. So the older drill bows that were used and passed down among carvers were actually used as kind of mnemonic devices to record and then pass on oral traditions and stories.
As the museum tour winds down, a crowd fills the library next door to listen to a talk by Iditarod champion Martin Boozer. Not far away, behind the snow dump, unrelenting wind is whipping up a ground storm around a bunch of sled dogs.
It is really bad weather.
These aren't Iditarod dogs. They belong to local mushers who are clipping three-dog teams to little sleds for the Nome Kennel Club's businessman's race. For a $150 entry fee, amateurs essentially hire someone else's dog team to race a three-mile loop. Ducking behind a truck for cover from the wind, Kirsten Bay says the 110-year-old Kennel Club aims to keep alive traditions of mushing, which most years includes putting on the businessman's race.
It's totally fun and sport. It's to give people an opportunity to be a dog musher, to run a little team a few miles around a course and see what it's like.
As the tiny teams take off, they're quickly swallowed by the murky swirl of snow. Spectators and supporters huddle by trucks in the parking lot, while just a few blocks away, back of the pack Iditaroders keep arriving under Front Street's Burled Arch. In Nome, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Fish Eye in the Sky. The Sitka Sound sacro herring fishery is in full swing. It's been less than a week, and the fleet has already caught over half its quota. And while most crew members work on the water, spotter pilots fish for herring from the sky. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
I'm going to take you inside the herring fishery. But rather than get onto a boat, we're going to climb into the clouds.
Sector Radio, Piper 6820 Lima.
Frank Foody calmly rests his hands on the controls. Mine are wrapped white knuckle onto my seat. His plane is a 1970s era Piper Super Club, which he rebuilt 10 years ago. He motions towards my life jacket and overhead to a waterproof case, where inside is a phone.
Turn it on up here.
Huh?
And make a phone call in case we crash and I'm dead or incapacitated.
Okay.
He's like a flight attendant, but with less flourish and blue jeans. Through his headset, he tracks a stream of chatter from air traffic control to herring captains to his observer. That's me. My job is to monitor for other planes so we don't crash while he concentrates on catching fish. I've plugged my recorder into his audio outboard and totally blank on all my questions. The only thing I managed to say is,
"Did I put my phone on airplane mode?"
No, I don't think that phone can make this thing crash.
Then there's silence, like that hiss of anticipation when a roller coaster is about to take off. Foody concentrates as the Piper collects speed down the runway, and then the ground falls away. We're up and climbing towards the sun, the water glassy down below.
And when we're out over the water?
To me, it's all varying shades of turquoise. But to Foody, it's the makings of the herring fishery.
There's fish right there.
The herring?
Yeah, can you see the flash in the water down there? Little sparkles.
And sure enough, there are the herring, a thin ribbon of black along the beach. Schools gather by the thousands every March to spawn. Sea lions, eagles, and other predators shortly follow. Foody points out a humpback whale down below, trailing something brown.
He just pooped. He's eating a lot.
And a few minutes later, he spots four or five humpback whales bubble feeding.
That's awesome.
I should add, there's no fishery taking place today. But if there were, picture a drama of horsepower and whitewater, with planes clustering overhead and seiners competing down below, everyone chasing the same mass of fish. What you're hearing is some video footage from Wednesday's fishery. As a spotter pilot, Foody helps his two boats set their net. He's like a conductor, but miles from the orchestra, and can easily get lost in the moment.
We do this all day. I've got like a million miles of this.
Wow. Foody has spent 40 years spotting, mostly for herring fisheries in Bristol Bay, Cordova, and Sitka, but he's also chased brine shrimp in Utah and sardines in Washington. He tried California, but hates night flying. He prefers fisheries like Sitka's that are safer, less stressful. Back on the ground, he tells me he's flown in places where there's 100 planes in the air at a time.
You can hear the other airplane over your headset. It'll key your mic. It's probably 5-10 feet away. Definitely get your heart going.
But he says close calls are part and parcel to the job. He'll be in the plane for 12, sometimes 18 hours at a time. And when the winds get squirrely or his observer alerts him to a plane overhead, he has to respond quickly. One time he was so focused on making a set that he almost didn't notice his plane flipping upside down.
I was looking through the skylight trying to finish the set and had to bail out. I probably could have pulled it off, but I finally got smart and just pulled out and let him finish the set himself.
There are moments like this of adrenaline and adventure, but also hours of waiting in cramped quarters. After all these years, Foody finds himself wanting to wind down. The market is soft, the fish are small, the average pilot will gross $15,000 a fishery, but that's nowhere near the payout of decades ago.
I've had enough flying around catching fish. Just don't want to fly too much.
Too much?
Yeah, 200 hours a year and 3-4 months of dealing with the airplane is nice.
Foody may be a pilot, but he's a fisherman at heart. While airborne, he wanted to show me every herring school, every spawn site, every whale. His dad was a pilot too, with a key difference.
I could catch more fish than him normally because he was looking at his airplane, playing with the knobs, making sure the engine's running right. I just looked outside and find fish.
Proving that not all fishermen wear waders. Some have wings. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Shaylin Storms, though most people know her as Yosti. Storms is from Unalakleet, but she currently works in Anchorage as a regional director for ANSEP.
My responsibility is scheduling hours for our employees, making sure the logistics are taken care of, and then I also get to work with the kids by doing the computer build and leading that and teaching them how to build computers. I was involved in ANSEP in high school, and I just continued with the program like year after year, and through ANSEP I was able to do a series of like science internships. And so right before I actually came to work for ANSEP, I worked for USGS, so the US Geological Survey, as a marine biology technician. And then before that, I worked up in Barrow, Alaska, as a wildlife technician. And then before that, I worked in my hometown as a fisheries technician, so doing a lot of biology work and having that type of background and doing science. Actually, I wanted to be a veterinarian, but I thought I didn't really want to go toward engineering because it didn't sound that interesting to me, but the science part interested me, and so I was like, huh, what else does the science have to offer? So I knew that UAA had a biology program, and so I kind of went that route instead. Anchorage is very convenient, and like we have Costco and you know all the big stores, and it's less expensive, but then at home, you know everybody. Everybody's your family. You have that like closer, tight community compared to Anchorage. But ANSEP does a good job of kind of providing that community here. Even though Anchorage is on the water, it doesn't really feel like it all the time. And where I'm from, we're right on the coast, and so the ocean is just right there. And I think that's kind of why I like biology, because my family, they participate in subsistence, and so just being able to go out and berry pick or go fishing, that also kind of sparked my interest in biology, because I kind of want to preserve those things for like the future generations after me.
Shaylin Storms lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.